It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. Louisiana Tech, of course, coming off a bye week, hosting UTSA Saturday inside Joe Ie Stadium. Pretty pivotal game inside of Conference USA West. We'll break down that game plenty. We're supposed to hear from head coach Skip Holtz of the Bulldogs sometime either 6:30 or 6:45, and then also talk to Javi Cardenas from InsideUTSA.com, the Rivals.com site for UTSA. We'll have plenty of Louisiana Tech UTSA talk over the next hour and a half. And anything else you want to talk Louisiana Tech, give us a call on the
Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Of course, you can join the conversation on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com, or you can use the hashtag BTB Radio on Twitter, and we'll answer your questions on the air.
Well, Jared, they were undefeated last week.
Yeah, it's always nice
to get a victory over bye.
Right, to have a bye week because you know you can't lose. This bye week was particularly sweet for Louisiana Tech because of the time that it came before the pivotal UTSA game, and an opportunity really to get some guys, not necessarily some guys back. Of course, Vontarius Dora looks like he'll be back for this game, but at least you can kind of lick your wounds and kind of get over some bumps and bruises that you may have.
Yeah, and Tech had gotten not really injured. I mean, they've been pretty fortunate, I think, along the way, especially considering they went to two top 10 opponents, Oklahoma and Auburn, and got away without being too terribly injured. We wanted to recap the season in this first segment, and you can't be disappointed from this season thus far, except for one game.
Sure, really, one game is all you can if you can look back at the beginning, at the first half of the season, and one game is really the only one that you'd like to take a do-over on, I think you'd call that a success, really. Plus, you're 2-0 in conference play. You've beaten two Western Division conference opponents. The only team in the conference on the Western Division that's undefeated in conference play, sitting at 500 at 3-3. And really, you look at the schedule, and you've got a chance to win out.
You know, a lot of people don't like the talk of people calling the games outside of conference play preseason. But for conferences like Conference USA, it really is the preseason. You don't really have a shot, especially in today's college football. You don't have a shot at the playoff. You've got an outside shot at getting into the top 25, and when you look at your season before it starts and you see Oklahoma and Auburn on it, who are two top five programs, and you're not in the top 25, your odds of getting into the top 25 aren't high.
Well, most of those schools that are going to be playing against top five programs like that for their home openers or homecoming or whatever it is aren't even top 50 schools. And when Louisiana Tech played Oklahoma, they weren't. They weren't even a top – I don't believe at that point they were even a top 75 school. And so, no. I mean, you're exactly right. You look at it almost as it's a game where – you want to get out with as few injuries as possible, and you want to see
and be respectable.
Exactly. And you want to play it. You want to keep the deficit respectable. And that's it. That's all you can ask for.
And then whenever you play FCS opponents like Northwestern State, you want a W. It didn't happen.
Right.
But because it is quote unquote the preseason, it doesn't really matter. It hurts pride from a fan base perspective. It doesn't hurt you in recruiting. Pride is all it hurts.
And most of the pride that's being hurt is of the fans. It's not necessarily of the players or of the coaching staff.
I would disagree with that because they know that they shouldn't have lost it. So, their pride hurts a little bit, but not nearly like the fan does.
Exactly. The pride that we're talking about is more of the fan. And so, and really, against the Northwestern State team, I'm going to tell you, it's the pride of the older fan as well. It's not the pride of the younger fan. It's not the pride of the fan that's my age or younger. It's not even really the pride of the current college student. It's really the pride of the older fan base.
It's you're right, and it may be a little bit more pride for the younger fan base that are from the Natchitoches area.
Sure.
They have friends that are maybe at Northwestern, and they're rubbing the salt in the wound. Those are the only ones that probably feel it. But anyway, all that being said, yes, the conference season is really all that matters for Louisiana Tech. They're sitting at 2-0. Got a W over Louisiana Lafayette in that preseason that does count towards their bowl eligibility. Now they got to find 3 wins in the next 6 to get to bowl eligibility. UTSA Saturday, in everybody in this room's opinion, should be a W. They should be sitting at 4 wins. The next week at Southern Miss, who's getting a little bit better, should be another W. Western Kentucky could be a tough one because that is going to be probably Tech's first true passing quarterback since Northwestern State, arguably.
Right. Dowdy's a good quarterback, and he's – well, that team can pass the football.
They can't play defense.
They don't play defense, and they really don't look to run the ball. So it's still going to be – you mentioned that it'll be the first passing quarterback that Louisiana Tech has really faced this season outside of Northwestern State. It's still going to be a one-dimensional team, though. And every team that Louisiana Tech has faced so far this season, including Auburn and including Oklahoma, have been one-dimensional.
But they're one-dimensional passing.
Jason Jones joined us here.
And we've shut down. You've seen North Texas, UTEP, ULL, running teams, or teams that didn't have a quarterback that can make you pay. Manny Diaz blitzes, and just overwhelms them, shuts down the running game, makes the quarterback get it out too quick. If this WKU, Western Kentucky, we got too many ODU, UAB, FIU teams in this conference. If this Western Kentucky guy can get that one-on-one coverage on the outside because of the blitz and connect like the Northwestern State guy did in the second half, you know, they took Middle Tennessee to triple overtime in a big shootout. They're probably going to have a big shootout against UAB this week, which – that game is being billed as the second best one in the conference behind Marshall and FIU. UTSA is so disappointing this year. Tech against UTSA is kind of like the third biggest game of the week.
You know, you talk about that. We'll get more into this about UTSA later, but you talk about demoralized fan base. We're only 6 games into the season, and they act like they're 11 games in, and Saturday's the last game of the year.
Yeah, they beat Houston. They play Arizona really well. And then the next thing you know, they're losing all these games, and they're like, oh, no, the sky's falling in.
But after Western Kentucky, Tech will play UAB, which is a team that wants to run it first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. They'll throw it a little bit more than I'm making out to be. But UAB should be another W. You got to go on the road, which is never easy to win on the road. Old Dominion, another passing quarterback, but they just lost to UTEP, which is a long trip, I know, from Norfolk, Virginia to El Paso, Texas. So, well,
and this conference is so Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, UAB, they'll win one that you think, okay, they shouldn't have won that one. Maybe they're getting a little better. And then FIU comes to their house and smokes them. Old Dominion goes to Rice on the road and wins. And then they go to UTEP and act like they don't know how to play football.
And then Tech with the Northwestern game.
It's almost like you got Marshall number one, Southern Miss, and now North Texas is making a claim for that bottom spot. And then everybody else in the middle is just, you know, you can rank them 2 through 12. Who knows?
And then, of course, close out the year against Rice inside Joe Ice Stadium. That one will be interesting to see as well. Jason, you think that it may be for the Western Division crown. I think it'll be decided by then.
It should be. If Tech drops a couple of these, like to Western Kentucky or to UAB, and has a couple of losses, and Rice has maybe 3 losses, then Rice could come in and upset Tech at home. Then they both have 3 losses, and Rice will be playing for the championship. So if Tech has a couple of losses, it could be for that championship, but hopefully they'll have 0 losses, 1 loss, and it'll already be decided.
With the last about 5 minutes of this segment, let's talk about this. Whenever TV becomes a discussion in conferences like Conference USA, Fox Sports Net comes calling and they say, oh, we want you to play at 11 o'clock in the morning. They already had one on the schedule with Rice at the end of the year, which that time of year is that's right around Thanksgiving. It's right the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's never a very highly attended game for Louisiana Tech.
Yeah,
it's not going to be any better at 11 o'clock.
Outside of Utah State a couple of years ago, that last home game of the year has always been poorly attended.
So you got another one Saturday against UTSA at 11 o'clock. Is it a blessing and a curse all at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, if UTSA hadn't lost one of these last couple of games that they lost, if they were coming on a two-game winning streak maybe, if the game was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I think it could have been a sellout if they, you know, with the right promotions. At the very least, it would have been another 24,000 or 25,000 fan attendance. Now I'm worried. 11 o'clock start, UTSA is kind of struggling. I'm worried that it'll be just, you know, 21, 22,000, which would be okay, but it's not great.
Do you think it'll be more than UTEP?
Yes.
Really?
I agree.
Coming off the win,
I think it'll be more than the UTEP game too.
The reason I don't think it will is hunting season. As stupid as that sounds, and it fires me up just to say it. But bow season, correct me if I'm wrong, has started. This guy, I don't even know when gun season starts, because that clearly isn't me.
Yeah, I mean, I think bow season might have started during the UTEP game that day. I'm not sure, but. I don't know. We always hear about
squirrel season. Heavens to Betsy if you don't go out and kill some squirrels.
Primitive firearm starts this week.
There you are.
So muzzle loader.
Whatever that is. I've always heard about it, but I don't know what a muzzle loader is.
Muzzle loader.
I know what it is. I'm just being sarcastic.
Muzzle loader and
you've seen your old Civil War movies. You know what it is.
Big old puff of black smoke. But anyway, I think that will hurt it.
I don't know. I mean, we've debated that for, you know, at least for 15 years since I've been around, probably longer than that. How much does it hurt a Tech game? But, you know, the last couple of years, 3 or 4 years, we've seen crowds of 24, 25,000. Well, I never thought we would consistently see that. I mean, the fans have been coming. I don't know how many fans go hunting and try to go to the games. Maybe the night games, it shouldn't have made a difference, but maybe this being a morning, maybe it will hurt them a little bit. But I can't imagine there's 5,000 guys out there.
That's fair.
That are not going to show up because of hunting season.
If there was 5,000 guys out there, the woods would be pretty full, and they're not that full. Wouldn't be able to hunt if there was that many out there. I don't like those 11 o'clock games. I don't think that college football was meant to be played at night. In the modern era, yeah, in the early days when there was no lights.
Yeah, it's, you know, Tech's just not to the point where they can tell TV, hey, sorry.
No.
Take a
and
hike.
Really nobody is. I mean, yeah. The SEC schools don't like to play in the morning either.
Yeah,
but they don't say no.
Because of their contract, I mean, they basically have to. So, I mean,
when you're getting paid $10, $20 million from ESPN, yeah, but per school, you're going to say yes, sir.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, hey, it's a sign of the times, but at least Tech's on TV. I mean, 5 years ago, you couldn't find a Tech game on TV. You might have one on ESPN2 against Fresno State or something, and now it seems like every game's on either CBS or Fox Sports or something.
I am a fan of this contract versus the WAC or some of the other conferences where it's all internet-based.
Oh, yeah.
You alienate a lot of your fan base. How many people over the age of 40 are even going to watch a game on the internet? Not many.
Oh, yeah, I'm 36. I ain't going to do it. I mean, I'll watch a Tech game. If that's the only way to watch it, I'll find a way. But other than that, no, I'm not going to watch anybody else. And I don't know. I mean, you see the Mountain West finally getting some games on regular channels, but their contract that they used to have was awful. Nobody saw that thing.
Well, that's because they were on that Mountain channel. Owned by Versus. And Versus doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I mean, nobody had it, and so it was basically a non-existent TV contract. Now, you know, Saturday night late, I had my choice between, like, Air Force against Utah State, I think, and then there was a Colorado State, Wyoming, or somebody game. There was a couple of them on after all the other games were over. I was flipping through them for a little bit, and I finally was like, I'm not interested enough in going to bed.
You know, talking about Utah State for a second, not long at all, that's a team that really picked up where they left off. And when you are able to make a hire from within, you're able to continue that momentum. In recent memory, Tech's never been able to do that.
Well, Tech's had two winning seasons in a row three times since 1988.
Woo.
Early 90s.
How about that statistic?
Early 90s, Joe Raymond Peace, they win six games one year, and then I think eight or nine the next year. They had a couple of good years there. That was the Willie Rofe, Doug Evans days. Late 90s, you had nine wins in 97, six. They were like 6-5 in 96 the year before that. Then they were 6-6 the next year. So only two winning seasons in a row, four non-losing seasons in a row, counting 96 through 99. And then under Dykes recently, they had a couple of winning seasons in a row. So can they put two or three together? Will Coach Holt stay here long enough to have the kind of success he had at East Carolina? You know, they won two Conference USA championships there, and won, you know, they were beating some of the bigger schools like East Carolina always does, and they seem to have several good years in a row. You know, will Coach Holt stay around? Will they hire from within if he does leave in 2, 3, 4 years? Can they keep that train rolling? With the conference they're in now, the facilities they're finally building, they're in a fertile recruiting area. It's there. It's there. They just got to make it happen.
They got to seize the moment. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk about UTSA, Louisiana Tech football, breaking down the action happening Saturday at 11 a.m. inside the Joe. We'll be back right after this.
Knowing the day I was born. Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones joining us for one more segment. Jared King, as always, here with us. A couple of sponsors, Jared.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parishwide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join the conversation. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parishwide Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to radio at bleedtechblue.com, or you can tweet your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we will answer them on the air.
Well, guys, you look at the this game Saturday. What's interesting, we always talk from a Vegas perspective because we like watching the lines. I've only found one sports book in Vegas that's picked up the game. One. That is not normal.
Do you think it has to do with UTSA's quarterback injuries?
Right here it's saying Tucker Carter probable at quarterback, and it says Austin Robinson probable at quarterback. So maybe it is.
Yeah, I mean, Robinson's their third string guy that's likely to start.
And I don't know what's going to happen. The Venetian's the only one that's picked it up. It opened at 6.5 at 5 o'clock on Sunday, 5 o'clock Pacific. By 7:30, it was up to 8, and there's been no movement since 7:30 Pacific time.
Wow. I tell you what, Tech's just gotten so lucky on this whole scheduling thing. You know, you miss Marshall and you miss Middle Tennessee, maybe the best two teams in the conference, definitely the first best one and one of the top three or four. And then you get the two main competitions in the West, Rice and UTSA at home. And then the UTSA fans have been begging for Blake Bogenschutz, the quarterback, freshman from nearby Carthage, Texas, right down the road from Shreveport. He's probably going to get his first start or second start here against Tech, right down the road from his hometown. They've been begging for him to be the quarterback. He gets a bone in his hand or something?
Fractured his hand.
So he's hurt, and so he's not going to play. And now they're maybe going to start – maybe Tucker Carter can play, but they're probably going to go with their third-string guy. And so Tech, again, catches a break on the schedule. And I just don't see how UTSA can come in here with a third-string quarterback and do anything against the Bulldogs.
You know, you look at – UTSA has a good defensive line, and we all know that if you've got a good defensive line, the rest is going to have success. I wonder if their numbers are inflated. Yes, they played Arizona. Yes, they played Oklahoma State. They played Arizona at home as what I've been billing as their Super Bowl all year. And after that near loss, they have been – they've been beat basically every game. They were not really lucky to beat FIU because FIU's not very, very good. But lost to Oklahoma State by 30, lost to FAU on the road by 4, and lost to New Mexico at home 21-9.
And New Mexico's a team that lost to UTEP. So that was just an awful game for them. And
then they, of course, won last week 16-13. They don't have much offense.
No, they don't have much offense. And now without their top two quarterbacks, I just don't see how they can put up any points. I mean, Tech's going to do the same thing they did in North Texas, same thing they did to UTEP, same thing they did to ULL. Just blitz, 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 shut down the run game, force that quarterback to throw. And I just see a three-touchdown-plus victory. I just don't see it.
I'm with you, Jared. Where do you see this game really playing out? I mean, obviously their defensive line's good and they've got a good safety, but that's defensively, I think that's really what stands out.
Yeah, defensively, that's where it starts and ends, is they've got a defensive line and one safety. This team's only scoring 20 points a game. They're giving up 25 a game. But when you look at who they've played, they didn't really give up a lot of points to Arizona. They didn't give up a lot of points to Houston, but they gave up 41 to FAU. And then, of course, I think they gave up 16 to New Mexico, or 21 to New Mexico, and 13 to FIU. So they're not giving up a lot of points, but they're not playing very good offenses either. And this team has proven that they're not particularly good against the rush. They're giving up 150 yards a game against the rush. They're giving up basically 4 yards a carry, which is not bad. That defensive line does a good job of stopping the run, but the offense is borderline abysmal. Part of the reason is because of the inconsistent quarterback play. I mean, they're going to be on their third quarterback this season, but look, Austin Robinson's played in 3 games. It's not as if he's making his very first appearance of the season or anything like that. He's played in 3 games. He went 14 of 17 against FIU, so he didn't. And the FIU defense is a ball-hawking defense. If there's anything that FIU can do,
it's stop the pass.
It's get interceptions and turn them into touchdowns. So he had a pretty decent performance against FIU. He was 14 of 17, but his first drive ended in a fumble. And Larry Coker mentioned that in his press conference this week, that after the first drive ended in a fumble, he kind of hung his head, and Coker talked to him and told him just to go out there and play as well as he knew he could, and he turned it around, and they scored two field goals there at the end of the game, and that's what won it. That UTSA defense did force an interception and a fumble on the last two drives that FIU had. Both of those drives, one of them was 9 plays, one of them was 5 plays. Both of them, they were moving down the field, and FIU turned the ball over. So really, FIU was in that game all the way to the very end and had a chance there to win it. UTSA got an interception on their last possession.
FIU, you talk about the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde of Conference USA. I think FIU may be number one of that list.
Yeah, I mean, they were predicted to be one of the worst two teams in the conference with Southern Miss. And then they go and who they upset, UAB. And
lost to Bethune-Cookman to open the year.
Yeah, and then they come in and almost beat Texas San Antonio. And they're really a lot better. And like Jared says, because of their defense, they're really one of the top half teams in the conference. So, and Tech doesn't even have to play them. I mean, Bulldogs got such a break on the schedule this year. But UTSA, I think the thing with their defensive line is Tech's going to be able to run on them a little bit. And then they're going to spread them out that passing game. They'll do the screen passes. They'll do the draw plays. And once they spread them out and get them guessing, then they're going to hit them with the Carlos Henderson or Sterling Griffin, you know, deeper passes. And if Tech can get that lead, 14-0, you know, 14-point lead, something like that, then I think their defense would be, you know, gassed, and the whole team would be trying to play from behind, and Tech's just going to pile it on.
UTSA does play a lot of cover two, where they put the two safeties deep and put the corners in a zone, and there should be some holes.
Yeah, Trent Taylor ought to be able to have success all day long over the middle of the field, which is exactly what Trent Taylor does, and Cody Sokol is looking to Trent Taylor more than any other receiver. So it seems as though the middle of the field would be open, and Trent Taylor will be able to capitalize on that. And not only Trent Taylor, but also Hunter Lee. Hunter Lee makes a lot of the plays that he makes in the middle of the field. Now, Sterling Griffin is not one of those guys that necessarily does that. But if you need a first down on third and long, Sterling Griffin's going to find his way to the chains, and he's going to find a way to be open.
He's going to go have a deep comeback. And for some reason, the corners don't know what's coming.
But something about this UTSA team that I wanted to point out before we moved on too far is that UTSA is 28 of 90 on third down this year. They are 30.
That's pretty good, right?
They're 30% on third down this year.
That's 117 in the country.
while they're giving up, the opponents are averaging 40% on third down against them. So this UTSA team is not being able to get off the field, which is part of the reason why they're being outscored in every quarter. Every quarter of the game this year, UTSA trails, except for the third quarter, they've outscored their opponents by 3 points.
And that goes back to Tucker Carter being so inconsistent. And, you know, if it's 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and you blitz him, he's going to make a bad throw. And so you want to try to get him in those passing downs on third down. And then, you know, 40% is not horrible for a defense on third down. But, again, if your offense is not staying on the field, the defense is just going to get wore down.
Well, it's not only that. Also, David Glasgow and Jarvion Williams, both of them, Glasgow has 260 yards rushing all season. He's ran the ball 84 times, and he's got 260 yards.
Look at his game log, though. He was doing pretty decent until the last two, and then they just shut him down.
Well, their offensive line is really underperformed.
Yeah.
They were expected to be one of the strengths of their team. They're making a change at center this week because of it. So, you gotta point your finger there, honestly.
And a lot is very similar to Tech last year. Inconsistent quarterback play and the offensive line was very shaky, and it can hurt the whole team.
You talk about UTSA giving up as much or how bad they are on third down. Tech is 37%, almost 40% on third down at 88th in the country. So you got almost 30 spots between them. 30.
That's a lot of teams. And Tech proved, not only against UTEP, but also against Auburn, that they were able to really defend against the run in those first and second downs to make it a third and long, make it a passing situation on third down. I mean, I don't want to keep mentioning this, but I'm going to once again. The average third down that Auburn had to convert was 7 yards. Auburn,
they're behind the chains most of the game.
Exactly. They were behind the chains most of the game, and they're a power run football team. So I don't think that Louisiana Tech is going to have a lot of trouble stopping the run in this one. And then, as you mentioned, they're going to be putting out a new center this week right there in the middle of the line, and Vontarius Dora is back, arguably.
Vernon Butler's still there.
Right. So you've got two really good D-tackles that could potentially have good games against what seems like a weak UTSA running game.
Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll have Javi Cardenas from Welcome back to Bleak Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleakTechBlue.com and host of Bleak Tech Blue Radio. Coach Holtz waiting for us on the line. A couple of sponsors before we get to Coach Holtz.
Bleak Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join us just as Coach Holtz has on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline, 888-993-7762.
Coach Holtz, how's it going? Coach, how's it going? Coach Holtz?
Can y'all hear me?
There we are. Now we got you.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. How we doing?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. A little practice and getting ready to watch a little film now.
How's the team been this week and coming off the bye week and staying with a good mind?
No, they've been great. I mean, they've been great. They had a really good work day today, a positive attitude. They understand what's on the table right now, and they know it's a conference game coming up and the opportunity to play it at home and having a quality opponent like UTSA, who was a lot of people picked to win the West Division. So I think the team's really excited about it.
Coach, I don't know if you heard the quote from Coach Coker this week where he said that he thinks that Tech's like a mini SEC school. What are your thoughts on that comment?
Well, I think the people, so many people, and it's the same thing that a lot of people said to me when I came here. It's the passionate fan base. I think when you talk about Louisiana Tech, they're just the people that are Louisiana Tech fans. They're passionate about their fan base. This is a great atmosphere, a great environment, and we certainly, I mean, if he's going to put that out there, then I think we've got an expectation to live up to at that point. So I know our fans will be great. I think the environment and the atmosphere on game day is a really great setting here.
It's Monday. You made an interesting comment about these early kickoffs, and you said that you kind of like them, and I thought that it was an interesting perspective. From a fan's perspective, of course, they like to get out there and sauce it up a little bit, but from a coaching perspective and from keeping your guys in the mix of it, just talk about from that perspective.
Well, I I think, you know, from a fan perspective, they can still tailgate. They just get to do it after the game. They just get to tailgate and stay for a while after the game this way. But from a coach's, you know, you sit there, and when you play at 6 o'clock, you know, you're getting them up at 8:30 or 9 o'clock that morning. You have meetings, you have meals, you have walkthroughs, you sit around and watch college football, and it's just really, then you got to bring your players back in and get them all refocused and recentered on what you want to get done. But this way, you know, you really start your game preparations mentally on Friday night before you put them to bed. And when you start talking to them about what time we're getting up, and all of a sudden pregame meal's at 7 o'clock, and you have your pregame meal, and then you're on the bus, and you're getting dressed at 9, and you're on the field at 10, and you're putting the ball on the tee at 11 to get started. So you really don't have a lot of time for an 11 o'clock kickoff to sit around and think about it or worry about it or wait for it to get here. You pretty much wake up and it's here. So I'm excited about it. I know it's one of the earliest kickoffs that we've ever had here at Joe Ivey Stadium, and excited to be part of it this weekend, and going to be a great opponent, and ought to be a great football game.
Coach, on game days, do y'all still go over to West Monroe and spend the night over there and then bring them back over?
We do. We go over there, and I think it's an opportunity to get your players away from the dorms, to get away from maybe their roommates on a Friday night where there's some social life happening on campus where they can get a good night's sleep, relax, get away from it. And I think it's a nice opportunity to get them away and relax. And so we'll go over there on Friday night and then have our pregame meal at 7:30 that morning, and then get on the bus and head this way.
So on a typical evening kickoff, what time is wake-up call for those guys?
Well, normally it's like 9 o'clock. We'll have a 9 o'clock wake-up and have a rolling breakfast and have them come down, and then we have some position meetings and kicking meetings and walkthroughs, doing some special teams and offense and defense, and then we'll give them an opportunity to go up and maybe take a nap for an hour or two and watch a little college football, and then bring them down for pregame meal around 2:30. But this weekend, the itinerary will be a little bit different, and it'll have a 7 o'clock wake-up call, so we'll make sure as we go over and go to the movie and then get them to bed and get some sleep.
So it's not going to change a whole lot this week as much as you might think it would.
No, it really won't. We'll lose some of the – we'll have to get up earlier, and we'll lose some of the meetings on Saturday in the morning, but I'm okay with that. I'm not a big game day meeting guy. I think we have all week to sit down and meet with our players and practice and get the game plan and the things that we want done, and we'll have a pretty in-depth meeting on Friday afternoon, just getting them ready for what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, and making sure we're all on the same page.
Coach, I know you've probably been preparing for both Tucker Carter and Austin Robinson at quarterback. What do those guys bring the same thing to the table, or what's different about the two?
You know, they have different skill talents. You know, when you look at one as a very very experienced player. He's played a little bit. He's older. As an upperclassman, he's got a very good arm. He's the one that was the quarterback when they beat Houston 27-7. Then they come back and beat Arizona, or lose to Arizona 26-23 in a really close football game. He's been in those big games. He's gained some experience. And then when he got injured, then they bring in the redshirt freshman who was a 6'2", 220-pound athlete. Really sparked him, did a great job in the FIU game this weekend. Was 14-17 throwing the ball, ran for 100 yards, and really did a nice job. But he brings a little bit more of legs and arm to the table. He still throws it. Threw the ball very well on Saturday. So I think he's probably a little bit more of a dual-purpose quarterback. I wouldn't call him a runner and a thrower. I would call him a little bit more of a thrower and a dual-purpose, one that can use his arms and his feet.
Do you think it helps you that you've played teams like ULL with a guy like Terrence Broadway that's similar to that, and some other dual-threat guys?
Yeah, the guy at Auburn's not bad.
no, he's not bad.
Marshall was pretty good. But, you know, yeah, that helps. Yeah, and, you know, we talked at the beginning of the year, Jonathan, about just the inexperience of this football team. Not really the youth, but the inexperience with so many guys we've had to put together in a year's time. And that's the biggest thing that you worry about is being able to see the athletic quarterback, the pocket quarterback, and gaining all this experience. And these first six games have been invaluable for us to get ready for the conference race. And I know, you know, a lot was made early about having to play the number of teams, you know, four of the first five on the road, all bowl teams, the first three in 13 days, and the challenges we had going into it. But now that you've been through it and played the Oklahomas and Auburns and played Lafayette on the road and played North Texas on the road, I think those are the things that help you grow and mature faster than anything else as a football team, is going out and having the opportunity to have those experiences. And I think all the experiences we've had through Lafayette, through North Texas, through an athletic quarterback at Auburn, I think all those things are kind of identified or have helped identify who we are as a football team and how we got here.
After that Northwestern State game, it seems like your secondary kind of had an enlightening. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, I think the secondary has really been playing well. And, you know, when you look at what we did at the Northwestern State game, the thing that probably bothers you more than anything was, A, the turnovers on offense are the glaring thing, having five turnovers. And you turn the ball over five times, you're probably not going to win. It makes it very, very difficult to win. But what you really would have liked to see, you would have liked to see your defense really step up and turn those turnovers into field goals and not touchdowns, and react into sudden change. And through some of that was through the secondary, but I think there's a veteran group back there in Adarius Barnes and Grogan and Bryce and Xavier Woods and Liggins, and I think those guys are a proud group, and I think they really kind of rallied the troops and circled the wagons and said, what do we got to do to get better? And I made the comment before that, you know, it's how we're going to react to these games early that are non-conference games that are going to help identify who we are. And if we were to win all those games and lose the rest, they don't help us. But if those games, and we have to lose that game to get our attention, to understand what it takes to become a better football team and how to focus and prepare and each and every week go out there and play, because winning is hard. I mean, when college football is hard. You look at it all over the country, how one team can win one week and lose another. It's hard week in and week out. I think those were all valuable lessons and helped formulate who we are as a football team right now, and I like the competitive nature of this team and the way we responded to some of the adversity and obstacles that we had early in the season.
And it's Tuesday, your injury update day. How did everything go today in your staff meeting? Are you going to be at full strength come Saturday?
Yeah, I think there's still a couple guys that have a little bit of a concern. Mitch Villamez did not practice today, but you know, we still got a couple days for him, and he's been playing with his injury all year, so I would imagine he's going to be fine. And Blake Martin's looking better and better. Xavier Woods looks better and better. Looks like both of those guys are going to be back. And then probably the only other one, you know, at that point we've got to wait and see what's going to happen with Bo Feet and with Paul Turner, I think, are the two that we just got to wait and see what's going to happen with them. But other than that, Kenneth Dixon practiced. He looked great. Blake, Xavier Woods, like I said, a lot of those guys are back and look really good. It's nice to have everybody out there again.
When you talk about all the injuries you did have for UTEP and you went out and won 55-3, does it speak volumes to the depth you've been able to build in a short time?
Well, I think it does in some respects, and it's also a real tribute to these players. We have never made a big deal about an injury, like, oh, no, how do we respond to that? Oh, no, he's out. You know what? The next guy's got to step up. And you look at it, Paul Turner went out with his injury about 2 weeks ago, and you know what? All of a sudden you look at Marcus Gaines comes in as a freshman, and you look at what he did, and you look at the way Carlos Henderson and the way he's responded in a little bit more of that starting role and the role that he's playing. The same thing's happening right now at linebacker. Well, you know, when Bo Feet went down and Russell Ferris has stepped in and done some really good things, and I think Nick Thomason's still playing really well. We've got a lot of guys that are out there practicing, and we have talked long and hard since the beginning of the season about any two that's on our depth chart is one snap away from being a one, and we've got an obligation as not only a starter but as a backup as well to make sure that we prepare to do everything everything the right way and we focus and dial in, because when the twos go in, we don't expect to drop off. And I think when you look at what we did at the Lafayette game, the score was 48-7 in the fourth quarter when we put our twos in. The score was 42-7 at North Texas when we put our twos in the fourth quarter. And we gave up 14 points in both of those games and couldn't make a first down. And then, you know, with our twos in the game. And then the difference in the North Texas game, it was 48-3. And we put our twos out there, and our two offense went down the field and scored. And our two defense went out there and got off the field. And I think that shows a little bit about the progress, the growth, the development of this football team, but also the great job that these coaches, these assistant coaches do in building the depth in their individual rooms.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and joining us today, Coach, and we'll talk to you soon.
I look forward to doing it again. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate everything you do for us.
You bet, man.
Bye now.
Coach Skip Holtz joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Good stuff always from Coach Holtz. I'm looking forward to having him back on Bleed Tech Blue Radio sometime very soon. Let's take a break. Other side of the break, we will have Javi Cardenas from InsideUTSA.com joining us. We appreciate Javi for going with the flow with the audible we threw at him. We already had him lined up, and Coach Holtz was calling him. So thanks to Javi for responding kindly to our audible. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Javi on the phones.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Give us a call on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline, 888-993-7762, 888-993-7762.
Javi, how's it going, my man?
Great. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. Appreciate you responding to the audible that we threw at you. Appreciate it greatly.
Hey, no worries. I would take a head coach over me. Don't worry.
Javi, big game coming up Saturday against a pretty – I would say it's a pivotal West Division game inside of Conference USA. UTSA, the team that everybody thought was the favorite. Louisiana Tech, the surprise team. What are your thoughts in general about the game?
Oh, I'm definitely. I think this game will go a long way in deciding who wins the division. UNT has definitely underperformed as well. Rice hasn't looked as good as last year. They tend to be picking it up a little bit, especially with their win last week against Rice. I would agree. This game, whoever wins this game will take hold of the division. For Tech, if they go 3-0, I mean, I don't really see anybody else putting up a fight. For UTSA, they lose this game, and I mean, the season's over. Realistically, I don't see them bouncing back from a 1-2 hole.
You talk about that the season's over after if they should lose a Saturday, the Roadrunners. That is, it seems like the fan base has almost mailed it in already. Well, why do you think that is?
The spirits have definitely been low ever since the loss to New Mexico. The expectations were just so high coming to the season that the losses to FAU and New Mexico, even though New Mexico was an out-of-conference game, it just completely demoralized the fan base. Going on the road and beating Houston early on, opening up a new stadium, and then almost pulling off the miraculous upset against Arizona, definitely got everybody riled up, and they thought UTSA was going to have a big season, but just inconsistencies have plagued this team, offensive line, quarterback play, just a multitude of things that really, really slowed this team down.
What do you think the biggest reason for the ineptitude of the offense? I mean, you look at Houston, they scored 27. Against Arizona, they scored 23. I think against a very bad FAU team, they scored 37, but that – they haven't scored a whole lot since those games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to credit it to a combination of things. Again, inconsistency with the offensive line, come back with poor quarterback play. This is the two worst things you can have. Add to that that the wide receivers haven't really impressed, and you got yourself like the perfect storm for ineptitude on offense. Coming to the season, UTSA had the most experienced offensive line in the country. They seem to have problems left and right to keep their quarterbacks up straight. That's why you see now Austin Robinson in the game, because Blake Bogenschutz and Tucker Carter are hurt.
Is Austin Robinson, do you think he's the real deal, or are you concerned about his play Saturday?
It's hard to know. Fans and even myself, we haven't seen him really in any game time situations. The only time we saw him early this season was just in a one play package that staff ran for him. Aside from that, it was just that game versus FIU. He looked very impressive. Running the ball, throwing the ball. He's not your prototypical pro style quarterback. He's not a run first type quarterback either. He does a combination of things well. He runs the ball, he throws the ball. He's not going to beat you deep with like the 30, 35 yard passes, but he will get you with the short, high percentage ones.
I gotcha. You know, in the last two meetings of these two teams, you go back to 2012 and then last year 2013, the games have been pretty chippy. I don't think anybody would contest that. What do you think that? Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I mean, the last two games have been back and forth. I remember the first time these teams met, I believe Louisiana Tech was ranked, and UTSA was up and coming in the WAC, and they put up quite a bit of points on a ranked La Tech team. And then coming back to the Alamo the next year later in conference, last year in Conference USA, UTSA managed to beat Louisiana Tech pretty handily. But yeah, both those games were very physical. Definitely some chippiness. I remember last year it was the last game of the season, so that was pegged as a rivalry game for both teams. There's definitely a factor there. Hopefully they can continue that fierce play this weekend.
Hey, Javi, you look at the line from Vegas that hasn't really changed at all since Sunday, and only one book has picked it up out of Vegas at an eight-point line. Do you agree with that line, or what do you think it should be?
No, definitely. I believe it started at around 7.5, I believe, so it's up to 8. Probably going to go up to 10, honestly. I think it's fair. I could see UTSA keeping it close, especially if Austin Robinson and the offensive line performs well. The UTSA defense has been doing incredibly well of late. They haven't allowed a lot of points. The defensive line has been doing fantastic. But I can also see the offensive line struggling, Austin Robinson getting rocked. Maybe he starts throwing some interceptions. And I could also see Louisiana Tech winning this game for 10, 14 points.
Javi, you mentioned that UTSA defense playing pretty well of late. They've been susceptible to the big game, though. 13 times through the air, they've given up a catch of 20 yards or more. Six times rushing, they've given up it was more like a 25-yard rush. And then against New Mexico, it seemed like every touchdown was a big gain. Is that defense susceptible to the big play?
Definitely. The secondary has had its struggles against teams. But I think a lot of that is due to the fact that the offense has too many three and outs. The offense doesn't stay in the field very long, so the defense is constantly out there trying to defend against these teams. If you look at the quarter-by-quarter score, UTSA tends not to give out a lot of points in the first two quarters. But once the third and fourth quarter starts rolling in, the defense just gets worn down. The defensive line isn't doing such a great job. The secondary's out there running around for most of the game. So they try to do their part. They try to play as good as they can. But if the UTSA offense can keep sustaining the drives, the defense just gets worn out. It's not because they're struggling. It's just that's just the way it happens. Because New Mexico, they had two of their touchdowns were, I believe, 70, 70-yard runs and 50-yard runs and just big plays, and the defense just got worn out because the UTSA offense was only able to put 9 points up on the board.
Every offense likes to stay ahead of the chain, so I'm not trying to sound like John Madden when I say this, but but how crucial will it be Saturday for UTSA to stay ahead of the chains? I mean, Louisiana Tech against Auburn, of course, a top-five team. We're able to keep the Tigers in some third and long situations.
Yeah, I know, definitely. It will probably come down to the first down play. If UTSA can get into third and threes, third and twos, just a short third down, and able to pick up those move the chains on third down, and allow that offense to have sustained drives. If they're able to do that, they'll definitely have a chance against Louisiana Tech. Vice versa, if they can keep those long sustained drives going, the defense is going to be out there longer. And against a great quarterback like Sokol, he's going to be able to pick and choose wherever he wants to go with the ball.
Javi, we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. Good stuff on UTSA. We'll talk to you during basketball season, I'm sure. Talk to you then.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Javi Cardenas inside UTSASports.com joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Let's take the break. Other side of the break, we'll talk more UTSA Louisiana Tech football here on ESPN Radio 97.7. John Tabor keeping it interesting tonight on Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. He told me he was going to mix it up tonight. He has not disappointed.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join the conversation. Give us a call. Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. 888-993-7762. Of course, you can email your questions to radio@bleedtechblue.com, or you can use the hashtag BTB Radio on Twitter, and we will answer your questions on the air.
You know, good stuff from Javi. You worry whenever you bring folks on whether they're going to be homers.
Sure, and I think we saw a little bit of that, you know, maybe a little bit last week. But Javi, it is what it is.
That's called a spade is a spade.
The Javi from UTSA, Go UTSA, Inside UTSA did a very good job. I was pleasantly surprised with just how realistic Javi was. Good to hear.
He was excellent. I don't think the line from Vegas is so far off. I am surprised that nobody else has picked it up. I don't think this game's as hard to pick as maybe some of these sports books are making it out to be.
No, I don't think so either, especially when you consider that Louisiana Tech has beat the points every game this season. I think that alone would be enough to pick it up. But it is what it is.
You look at the statistical rankings, that we look at this every week, and Tech didn't play last week, but they are going to move up and move down because other games did happen. Passing yards allowed, Tech is now 30th in the country at 205.3 yards a game.
Which just proves what we've been saying about that secondary all season long, and really even dating back to last year. That secondary has only improved with the improvement of the defensive line, and particularly that linebacking core, and a lot of it has to do with Manny Diaz because he's been able to get pressure on the quarterback. Yeah, a testament to that secondary.
And you think where could this team be had they not played two top? Where could this defense be statistically speaking had they not played two top 10 teams? And not laid an egg against Northwestern State.
Right, statistically speaking, I mean, you have to think that they would be in the top 25 in total defense when you take those average points off of their defense. I mean, you give up big points, 48 to Oklahoma and I believe 45 to Auburn, and so you're talking about close to 100 points right there. Actually, more than, well, I don't know. I'm not good at math. 100 points.
That's why you're in journalism.
Exactly. 100 points right there. And you take that off of your defense, and boy, you have to think that they'd be much higher ranked.
I know exactly what you're getting
statistically.
At. Total defense, they're sitting at 39th. Team passing efficiency defense, they're at 38th, which are very respectable. Team passing efficiency from an offensive perspective, they're at 50th. So the offense is doing okay. Total offense isn't great at 86, but when you look at UTSA or UTEP, when they put up 55 points, they did so on short fields because of what the defense was doing. And then also the boneheaded plays by UTEP of stepping out of bounds on the one on a kick return. But that's beside the point. Passing offense, 60th in the country. Once again, very respectable. Scoring defense, it's a little lopsided because of those games like Hulse was talking about, ULL and North Texas, where they were beating the dog out of them and let them score two touchdowns late. That the scoring defense is sitting at 79th in the country at 27.8 points a game. So it's you got a skew there from total defense of 39th to scoring defense of 79th.
Right, and like you mentioned, part of that is the trash time touchdowns that were scored against them. Part of that is the big points that were put up by Auburn and Oklahoma. Regardless, you're giving up less than four touchdowns a game. And like I said last week, when you look at – if you're a Louisiana Tech fan or really a fan of a group of five school in general, if you're inside the top 50 in those defensive categories, you have to be pleased with the way your defense is playing. And 50th may not sound like they're ranked very high, but you're in the top half of the country, right around between 50 and 60, and where you want to be. There's
when
nothing wrong with that.
When there's five conferences,
exactly,
with over 10 teams a league, you're over 50 there of Power Five schools. So you're in good company.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, those are all respectable numbers. And let's face it, they're better numbers than any Louisiana Tech fan thought that we're going to have this season anyway.
There's no arguing that. One place that I have been disappointed is in the punting game. Punt coverage, I made probably the stupidest question I've ever asked at a press conference. I mean, and it's not even close. It was the stupidest question I've ever asked. Because I asked Bradford that this punt return game was better against UTEP. Well, they never punted. Punt coverage team was better. Well, Tech never punted. So it's easy to be good at punt coverage when you never punt. So worst question I've ever asked at a press conference, bar none. So I think I'm doing okay if it took this long for me to have that boneheaded of a question. Fewest penalty yards per game is one stat that I think is a lot of reason for Tech's success this year. They've had some untimely penalties. They're 39th in the country at 48.17 yards a game in penalties. That sounds like a lot of penalty yardage, but you're still in the top 40 with 48.17. Who can you imagine who's in last if 48 yards is 39th?
I can't. That's a good question.
Texas Tech, 125th, 104.33 yards in penalties a game.
Wow. That's a whole field's worth of penalties.
UTSA's 95th with 66.33 yards in penalties a game.
Which is something that I was going to mention during our UTSA talk, was that UTSA team the UTSA team has struggled in penalties. They've struggled in special teams. And I don't mean to make Javi sound like he was incorrect, but UTSA...
He had a good response. The fact is the defense is getting tired.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to mention. UTSA is actually winning by six minutes a game in the time of possession. UTSA's their offense is controlling the ball more so than the other team by more than 6 minutes a game. So, yes, the defense is out there on the field, but they're still getting more of a break than the opposing team's defense. So,
6-1, half dozen of another. It's probably the second half that he may be talking about that.
Sure.
That you got to look at the second half numbers. Oh yeah, we got some tickets to give away. I don't know how I forgot about that. Give us. We'll take caller number 5 for giving away Louisiana Tech UTSA tickets here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. I'm glad you mentioned that. We don't have much of the show left, so we got to get those given away. 11 o'clock kickoff, of course, inside the Joe. Saturday, a pivotal Conference USA Western Division matchup. Give us a call at 888-993-7762 on their Keller Williams Parish-wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. Caller number 5 to win those Louisiana Tech UTSA tickets. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, Jonathan Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Don't look at me funny. I gotta call both names, Jay Ford, Jonathan Ford. People gotta know what Jay stands for. You can't give yourself a nickname. People gave it to me. Couple of sponsors, then we'll get to our friend Rafe on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Dowling Smokehouse. Join us, just like our friend Rafe did, on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners Hotline, 888-993-7762. It's 888-993-7762. This is the last segment of our show this week. You can still get your questions in on Twitter with the hashtag BTB Radio.
Rafe, how's it going, my man?
Oh, man, having a great day so far. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. You're two tickets richer.
I know it. I've got a slew of people that I have to kind of mediate tickets for, and so I can take care of them without having to come out of pocket now.
There you go. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. Hey, one thing that I've noticed throughout the show is that I'm not quite confident as you guys are, and it's really because of what we saw at North Texas contrasted with what we saw against NSU. And it seems like if we don't hit a few big plays and have a couple of breaks where the opponent gives us the ball or we get a big play on defense, that we're susceptible in a close game. And one thing about UTSA is if they play some close games, not a lot of people run away from them. And so they're kind of built to hang around. And I'm wondering if we're going to be able to, in the running game, which we haven't since last year, get a really huge run. So that's what's going to be working.
I think that's a fair concern. Tech will be much healthier in the running game this week with Blake Martin being back and Kenneth Dixon coming off a bye week with his foot injury. So I think it's a valid concern. UTSA is very good on the edges of their defensive line. They're not as strong at the tackle positions. And if they're able to stack the box on Tech and roll the safeties down, I think they'll be able to stop the run. But Tech's got to keep those safeties honest and keep them out of the box.
Yeah, and you know, this is the same team. I watched them first game. I know it's been a lot of games since then, but the way they played Houston and kind of controlled that game, the way they played with Arizona, they're the type of team that could give us problems, you know, if we can't get away from them. And, you know, I've noticed in the games that we've won, we just kind of get away. You know, that we go ahead and gas it, and there's really no hope by the time you get to the end of the third quarter. But, you know, the sample size is small, but the one game where we didn't quite put the opponent away, although we were handling them, was that Northwestern State game. And you know, just lo and behold, not bad breaks happened, and they won the game. So, you know, I'm sure that we've learned some since then. Our defense, like I said, the UTSA is the best I've seen. I haven't seen our defense be that good since way back whenever we went to Alabama and lost like 6-3 or whatever, 7-6. But that's got me excited. But anyway, I'll be watching. I look forward, even though we got to get up at the crack of dawn to get there. That's fine.
What's your prediction, Rafe?
Having said what I said, 48-14.
You're not a homer, are you, Rafe?
I'm not a homer. I'm just, you know, a little concerned.
Is that a realistic pick? Do you really think 48-14?
48-13. That's more realistic. I was going to give them 2 touchdowns, but I think we're going to blow them out. But anyway, I just wanted to act concerned.
All right, Ray. Appreciate you coming
on
the show.
Thank you.
That's excellent. Man acts like the sky's falling, then he says 48-14.
Right. Right, which is a testament to that defense, though. It really is, because it has fans believing. And I'll tell you what, UTSA has given up 39 points off of turnovers so far this season. They're turning the ball over on offense almost twice as often as they're forcing turnovers, which is never good if you're an offensive coordinator. The red zone defense has given up 55%. When you get into the red zone, 55% of the time you get a touchdown. And also field goal kickers are 86% against them in the red zone. But what I'm trying to say is that when you get them in a short field and you're in the red zone, chances are you're going to get a touchdown. And chances are that offense is going to give you a short field with their turnovers.
Well, Tech's in the same position as far as red zone defense goes. They're not good inside the red zone. Now, luckily, they're pretty good between the 20s.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, Tech is number 93, tied for 93rd in the country in red zone defense.
That's not great. That's not great. But when your strength is your secondary, really, when you're in a short field like that, the secondary it takes them out of the equation, and so I can understand
running the ball inside the 20.
Right, so I can understand why that ranking is where it is.
I don't think it'll be as lopsided as Rafe thinks it will. I think I'm gonna go ahead and give my prediction because I've had this number in my head honestly since yesterday.
I've had the same prediction since the line first came out.
I'm thinking 30-10 Louisiana Tech.
Interesting to note, UTSA has had the lead at halftime against Florida Atlantic, against New Mexico, both of those games they lost. Against FIU, they had the lead at halftime and ended up having to come back with field goals to beat them 16-13. This UTSA team is being outscored by more than a touchdown in the first quarter. In the third quarter, they're being outscored so far this season by 21 points. In the fourth quarter, they're being outscored by 13 points. Only is it in the second quarter, 33-30, where they're actually outscoring teams. And so the first half, UTSA is a better team than they are in the second half, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. And maybe it's because of who they've played with Oklahoma State, Arizona, a little bit of FAU.
And I'm still not so sure how good Arizona is. The Pac-12 is not very good.
The top of the Pac-12 is good. The rest of them are not. And so, I don't know. It's hard to say.
That's saying Arizona's at the top because they beat Oregon.
Well, they did, but I still think that Oregon is a better team than Arizona. It's tough. It's tough. It really is. And that's the reason why you play the game, right? My prediction, ever since the line came out for this game, I immediately thought 42-17.
42-17.
And I think 42-17 is where I'm going to go ahead and stick with. I do think the offense can score that many points. At that time, it was not Austin Robinson as the quarterback for this game, and it still may not be. You could still see Tucker Carter. I'm not sure.
I think we might see both.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Robinson's been in. Like he said, like Javi said, they did have a package for Austin where we'd come in and had a one play package. But so you're probably see both. I just think that defense is going to fall behind early, and they're going to have to try to pass the ball to get back into it, and they can't.
Yeah, that team is not built to play from behind. Much like UTEP. UTEP wasn't built to play from behind, and thus they lost 55-3.
Javi mentioned the receiving core hasn't been great for UTSA this season. He was right. They're averaging 11 yards a catch, and they've got two touchdowns through the air total. So they are.
Well, they haven't scored many touchdowns since week one.
No, they haven't. They haven't scored many touchdowns. They haven't scored many touchdowns at all this season. You're looking at 13 touchdowns on the season, two touchdowns by the quarterbacks as opposed to six interceptions by their quarterback stable, really. Tucker Carter. Tucker Carter, 68 of 119. Blake Bogan shoots was 22 of 39. And Austin Robinson, 14 of 17. So they've had plenty of quarterback play, that's for sure, but none of it was very good.
The odd thing for me about that first game of the year is I guess Houston just laid an egg. They're number number 19 in the country in scoring defense at 19.2 points a game.
Well, they're 3-3 on the season. They were able to shut out Grambling State. They were able to hold UCF to 17 in a loss.
Held UNLV to 14.
Right, and then Memphis they beat 28-24. I'm not sure about that Houston team. I don't think they're very good, but points against, they're 19th in the country at 19.2. So that's pretty good. It's hard to say. That Houston defense obviously does, have some playmakers.
So I don't, John, you got a prediction for us?
38-20. Tech.
He's close to my differential as well.
Right.
30-10 is what I believe I said.
Yeah, 30-10. What is the over under for this game?
There's not
an over under.
I've never seen a game, especially for an 11 a.m. kick. There's not many of them, so you'd think that they could get some early money and get some parlays. I know that's part of the business. It's strange to me. There's only five movements in the line all week. And maybe some people will pick it up. I don't know. Offshore, there's some more lines, but they're all at the same. They're all at 8. So I don't know. It's interesting. Let's take this opportunity to end it. Good show.
Good 90 minutes.
Thanks to Skip Holtz, Louisiana Tech football coach, joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, and Javi Cardenas from Inside UTSA joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, good work. John, always, all on the ones and the twos. I am Jay Ford. See you next time, right here, same place, same time.
You've been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN.